Welcome to All the Analytics with Nick. Welcome to All Analytics Conversations. This is Jim Connolly. I'm editor of allanalytics.com. Predictive analytics are on the agenda for today's show, and predictive analytics are on the minds and the plates of lots of analytics professionals and their employers. Those predictive analytics represent the first step into advanced analytics. In fact, they also represent a shift when it comes to how we use computers in general. For all those years, most of what we did with computers was look at what happened in the past and then let humans project what will happen in the future. With predictive, we let the computer review the past and then project what's likely to happen tomorrow or next year. Think of predictive analytics as being applicable to many types of applications across an organization. We'll touch on that today, but we'll also delve deeper into what those advanced analytics can tell us about a business's customers. You know, what will they buy, how their tastes are changing, and which customers might be upset or even at risk of jumping to a competitor. NIIT Technologies has been guiding businesses into advanced analytics as a consultancy. Our guest today is Graham Clark, Executive Vice President and Head of Digital Services for NIIT. Graham is filling in for NIIT's U.S. President, Dingra, who had to make a late change in his schedule. Welcome, Graham. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the thanks for your time, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you for joining us. Before we get into the discussion, just a note for the listeners. As usual, we welcome your questions and comments on the chat board below. However, I'll note that we have a bit of a technical issue resulting in some posts being slow to appear at all. If you type some, then try refreshing is helping in some cases. Now, I apologize for this inconvenience, and we do have our tech team looking into the problem in the background. To get the discussion started, you know, if you're able to post, please introduce yourselves to your peers on the chat board and perhaps share your own observations on the benefits and challenges associated with predictive analytics. So, Graham, let's get started. General question, how do you assess the state of predictive analytics adoption in terms of how many companies are doing it?
So, I mean, we as you know, we have a pretty global purview in our target industries. I think the adoption maturity is all over the place, both from different industries, but also from different companies. And in fact, if you blend the world of predictive and prescriptive analytics, right? So, predictive being, figuring out what's going on effectively, and prescriptive being actioning that results from it. We see that very much as a journey with every company at a different level of maturity, but ultimately the vision is the same, and almost every company is investing in and increasing their maturity, you know, almost on a day by day, certainly a month by month and quarter by quarter basis. If you look at our target industries, you know, the investment banking industry has been in the analytics driven business and the predictive analytics driven business for a long time. I personally remember, 30 years ago, standing on the New York Stock Exchange and the London Stock Market floor, and the floor was covered with people waving pieces of paper around and running around. And today, you know, those trading floors look a lot like blinking lights being run by analytics engines. In the insurance industry, similarly, we're seeing, you know, a massive move to kind of the data-driven machine, which we see as being part of the vision of every enterprise, a heavily automated machine with a smaller number of experts who are basically helping run the machine, even helping guide the machine, you know, but everything effectively driven by an underpinning analytics layer. So I think it's difficult to really pinpoint it, other than to say that everybody is moving forward, and everybody's moving forward in somewhat of the same direction, which is to use predictive and prescriptive analytics to help them optimize their business, but also to help them optimize their customer, their supplier, and their business partner experiences, and also their employee experiences.
As far as the stage that people are at today, in general, what are you seeing? Are they, do one or two pilot projects, or do they have, you know, multiple production applications running, you know, across the enterprise?
I mean, most of our clients have a number of production applications and a series of proof of concepts underway. Generally, the proof of concepts tend to be in the world of rapidly evolving technologies. You know, we see a pretty rigorous evolution of technology solutions available in the marketplace, and we see a pretty pretty rigorous and accelerating portfolio of solutions that actually use predictive and prescriptive analytics in the marketplace. So most folks have got, you know, they've used a lot of the basic technologies, building on their, you know, past 10, 15 years of building, you know, big data, medium data, whatever term you want to use, but databases and data warehouses that have collective data, and they're trying to figure out how to continually use that data better, and also to bring more data into the enterprise in order to increase their ability to be able to, you know, optimize their business and optimize their customer experiences, whether that be, you know, a solution like Digital Foresight that we use, which basically meshes external data with internal data and behavioral and predictive models in order to help businesses target their operations much more effectively, or whether it's as simple as, you know, trying to get a better understanding of their basic customer profiles and customer portfolios by doing a better job managing that data. So it's, you know, most people have got a few production things in place. Most people have got a number of proof of concepts going, and because the industry understanding of what's possible and the industry understanding of the solutions that are available is moving so quickly, you know, that's going to be a never-ending journey, we believe.
Now, you mentioned prescriptive. I've been kind of surprised the past few months seeing data on how many people are really interested in doing prescriptive analytics. You know, some actually have it in their, if not immediate plans, in their near future plans. Are you seeing the same thing in the market?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely. I mean, we see massive interest. I mean, in the, you know, certainly in the customer focused analytics world. I mean, one of the most defining experiences that, you know, tens if not hundreds of millions if not billions of people have had in the last 15 years is, you know, Amazon's, you know, people like you are interested in this, right? Which is a classic and very primitive prescriptive analytics outcome, but the world of next best action is clearly an area of major focus, and what we are, I think, the real maturity of that business model, in addition to some of the tools, is that we're starting to see pretty solid proof points of analytics driven machines making better decisions than humans, right? And to me, that is the, you know, one of those key turning points in the entire digital and analytics industry, is where we're starting to see situations in, you know, investment forecasting, or we're starting to see customization of insurance products by machines. You know, we're starting to see healthcare examples. And so not just in the core industry in which we work, but also I think in the, you know, the regular public consciousness, you know, we're very quickly approaching that point where, you know, the consumer, the regular customer, the business professional is beginning to accept that the machines are sophisticated enough to make decisions, and certainly the data inputs that are required in order to make decisions are so overwhelmingly vast today that we're getting to that point where, you know, the machines are outperforming the humans. And I think that global psychology is what's driving business professionals to this exploration of the prescriptive analytics world. And then, as I said, the solutions that are available are obviously becoming more sophisticated and more robust in order to give them that conviction. And I think we're going to see pretty quickly, I personally believe in 5 years, we're going to see significant inroads in industries where, you know, a significant number of knowledge workers are going to find themselves replaced by overperforming machines. And as I kind of alluded to, I had the personal experience over about a 25-year period of watching what happened in the investment trading industry, where we went from, you know, an investment broker or a trader on the floor effectively waving pieces of paper around in the early 80s to sitting in front of a bank of computers by the end of the 80s to, you know, to less of those people with the computers making the decisions, but the person monitoring them and intervening when they need to today where, I forget the numbers, but I think 70-something percent of all stock trades in the world today involve no human beings. And so I think we're going to see that in the insurance industry. We're going to see it in people being assisted in selection and buying behaviors, just like the Amazon thing. I think we're already seeing it in the healthcare industry where, you know, automated machines driven by predictive and prescriptive analytics are advising healthcare professionals. And I think we'll quickly get to the point where, you know, those automated machines are just outperforming the professionals. And then similarly in wealth advisory, and even in our core industry of travel, right, which constitutes about 30 to 40% of our work across the world, where we see those analytics-driven machines involved in the customer part of the travel journey, in the engineering part of the travel journey, you know, in the flying part of the travel journey, because most planes today land themselves and take off via automated machines. So I think we're just getting to the point where we believe that the analytics driven machines can effectively do the job better than people, and that's really driving companies to make some pretty bold investments in that area in order to make sure that they're at least keeping pace with the changes in the world, if not trying to adopt some kind of leadership position.
Now, one of the things that, you know, I've heard people advise, you know, experts advise recently is to make sure that when you're building out a predictive analytics application, that you keep your eye on eventually moving that to a prescriptive model. Is that being considered by most people, or are they letting that stuff escape and then having to redo, you know, a lot of back fixing once they want to move to prescriptive?
Our experience is that certainly, let's say the world is divided into thirds, right? Leaders, kind of followers and laggards. So certainly the leaders are doing that. They clearly understand the concept to begin with the end in mind. And in today's world, whether they're going to be using analytics-driven prescriptive machines today or whether they're planning to, they understand that. So they're building with respect to that. You know, we also see the mid-performers, many of those people are playing catch-up, right? So somebody in their industry has made a move, has done something which they're now reacting to and playing catch-up, and they're just building what they need to catch up, and then the laggards, you know, are still thinking about it. And even within that, there's a lot of historic and incumbent technology in place, including, you know, data stores that are causing that people have to deal with going backwards. And then we also see, whether you're in that leader's kind of middle or the laggard space, you know, we also see some other technology evolutions really changing how companies adopt that. So one of the most interesting initiatives we're involved in the world is an airline where they've decided they have a need fundamentally, at its fundamental principle, to move from a passenger database where they know about the fact that you fly to a customer database where they have a lifetime view of you. And the cost of doing that for a fairly significant airline, you know, if they basically built a data warehouse is a lot of money. And there's a number of well-known database companies who would love them to spend that money. And so what we've helped them figure out is they can create a cloud-based data aggregation layer where they basically move their data into that on an incremental basis, segment by segment, you know, delivering value against that data as they move forward. So I think, you know, most of the people who have got them, so they've got their head around what their, you know, data analytics strategy is all about and where they're really going, you know, really begin with the end in mind as far as the prescriptive piece. But there's a lot of reactive stuff going on in the marketplace, which is just necessary in order to deal with competitive forces.
What are you seeing in terms of benefits from predictive? Is it primarily monetary in terms of new sales or operational savings, or are some companies looking at the softer benefits, such as improving their brand value?
It's a little difficult. I mean, we see all of that. I would say from a very personal perspective, not just today, but over the last 10 years, one of the greatest values of predictive analytics is around the the Mark Twain quote, which I will abuse, which is, it ain't what you know that'll kill you. It ain't what you don't know that'll kill you. It's what you know that ain't so. So often predictive analytics reveals things to companies, whether it be about themselves or about their customers or about even their competitors, you know, which violate long-held beliefs about how things should be done, you know, who the particular purchasers are, who their most loyal customers are, what those customers are interested in. And so, you know, from a business improvement, you know, customer experience, operations, some of the greatest benefits come from those insights, which literally will turn an organization on its head when they start to let the data drive their decisions. But you know, there was a fairly significant shift about 2 or 3 years ago in our marketplace, which I think was part of the global economic situation, where following the crash in 2008, I think everybody was, you know, vehemently obsessed with cost management and operation savings and all those elements. And that lasted for about maybe 6 years, 5 years. And in around 2014, 2015, we saw a pretty hard shift towards revenue maximization. And a lot of the work that we see today is about how can you change your customer experience, especially something that we focus on called digital emotionally empathetic experiences, or digitally three, which we believe are kind of the secret source of the most successful and most profitable businesses. How do you get a deeper understanding of your customers, and then how do you modify the way your business responds to those in order to really kind of get deeply inside their souls, both today and long term? And that is all ultimately about revenue maximization, but revenue maximization on the long term, not necessarily the short term transaction. And with that revenue maximization come a lot of insights into, you know, operational things that you either do inefficiently or that you do that you shouldn't do. And as you take those things away, then obviously there are significant operational savings associated with that movement.
There's no shame in quoting Mark Twain. I wonder what he would say about the world today.
other than rumors, you know, rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated. I don't. I mean, you know, he was a man of change, right? And there's no greater example of change. I am originally British, now living in America. So last Friday was a fascinating day for me. So you know, I have no idea, but I do believe that he would clearly understand this dynamic, this movement that we see the world under in just about every industry, in every marketplace in the world, which is moving towards these highly intelligent, data-driven, but automated machine-based business models that interestingly deliver, you know, ever better value to customers and employees. And those things are all fundamentally driven by this world of analytics. Plus, you know, Mark Twain was a great student of people, like any good author. And so I think the world of predictive analytics, the world of prescriptive analytics, the world of data analytics in itself, in this day and age where we can manage these immense volumes of data and drag value from them, I think it would be an area of fascination for Mark Twain, because from a psychological perspective, you know, it gives really impressive insight into the way that people act and the way that people feel, and does it on a global basis, right? So you don't just have to look at the people that you live around. You get to look at the people all across the world and how they differ and how they're the same.
Now, what are some of the common misconceptions that you see or you'll hear people talking about when it comes to predictive, in terms of what predictive analytics can do and what they can't do?
So, I mean, we see two or three that I think are incredibly common. The most obvious one is that predictive analytics is the solution to world hunger and everything, and they're not really doing enough of the detailed work to figure out, you know, not just what can the technology do, but what can the technology do within the context of a particular organization. So, for instance, what data is available, what data is not available. You know, what kind of privacy and confidentiality rules do they exist in within their market or their markets? So I think the idea of going at it like it's going to solve all the world's problems is one. I think the second one, and something we see happen time and time and time again, is that it isn't a project. It's a process and a journey. So it's not about, you know, plugging in some technology that's purchased, and then you turn the lights on and a miracle occurs. The actual work of understanding how the machine operates and tuning how the analytics machine operates to deliver value is an incredibly intensive effort. The more you know, the more you know you don't know. So I would say definitely the world hunger thing. The second one is this idea that it's a project, whereas in fact it's a journey. And then I think the third one, which we've all suffered from and sometimes caused in the industry in which I live, is the idea that it's a technology solution. It's something you buy off the shelf that then, as I said, you put a project together, you install it, the lights come on, and a miracle occurs, and it solves world hunger. So those three things are probably the biggest misconceptions. The fourth thing I would throw out on the list, only because it underpins everything, is this idea of data availability, data currency, and all the topics, you know, frequency of refresh, privacy, confidentiality, and all the topics we've been in for a decade in the data world, not paying close enough attention to all those constraints and sometimes opportunities that are available in a predictive or a prescriptive analytics model.
Graham, I just want to give you a heads up that we are experiencing some additional technical issues. Apparently, the audio is not streaming right now, but I'd like to continue talking because I believe it is that we are being recorded by Blog Talk Radio, so we can use this for on-demand purposes right after the show when things are back to
Perfect.
Normal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you look, you know, it's interesting when you mention that the process and the journey. That runs counter to the way most corporate applications have been developed over the years. So it needs a different mindset. You know, they're used to roll out maybe a couple bug fixes and then, you know, let it go for another 3 years and it'll be fine. But this is more of, we're going to revisit this on a regular basis and we're going to learn from it, and it's going to learn from us. That requires a different mindset and does require different people. Do prescriptive analytics projects require different skill sets than we're used to?
Absolutely. I mean, I think so. To kind of hark back to something you said as well. So in NIIT, we situate our predictive prescriptive analytics offering in our digital services practice, which I run globally. And part of the reason for that is because, you know, running a successful technology-underpinned predictive and prescriptive analytics program is a lot more like a successful website than it is your traditional corporate application, right? Continuously tuning, continuously modifying, continuously optimizing. So the skill sets... So there's a number of different skill sets that I think are really, really, really important, which are somewhat different than the past, although they've been evolving for a while. And again, related to where we sit, our predictive prescriptive analytics service offerings and our capability. So one of them is the whole question of user experience, right? So the machine that you're using can be as brilliant as you want it to be. The data that underpins the machine can be as insightful and as comprehensive and as broad in scope as you want it to be. But if you don't deliver the actions and the information in a way that's easy for the target audience to consume, either in a predictive analytics model for that target audience to take that and then create their own actions, or in the case of a prescriptive analytics model, for those people to take that action and act on it because they understand it and it's convincing. So the whole user experience design world becomes much more important, the more sort of sophisticated, the more robust, and the more powerful the analytics engine that you're dealing with. And I think that's a consideration. You know, we see a kind of a three-layered model of, you know, data integration and analytics and then actioning, and the actioning piece has a very heavy element of consumability and experience in it. I think the whole area of understanding data-driven next best action and prescriptive models requires a blend of data understanding, because you have to understand how the machine got to where it is. It requires a business contextual understanding, which again, from our perspective, we're very focused on five industries, and we believe that you can't deliver real value in these things unless you deeply understand the industry that you're in, because it's very contextual. So you have, you know, this ability to be able to have confidence in the machine, understand how it got there, the ability to be able to interpret the actions in a way that actually makes sense. And then it there's a skill set around kind of the continuous optimization world, kind of an agile data world, for want of a better term, which means that you can continuously evolve, you know, what the machine's doing, what the analytics are doing, what the outputs are. And then we see a, you know, we see a difference in terms of even things as mundane as project management and operations management, where in the same way as 15 years ago, you know, we saw a change in the world of digital management, whereby a digital project manager suddenly had to deal with business analysts and, you know, crazy creatives and technology people. You know, these analytics systems now bring in these data scientists and these data analytics people, and even UX-centric data visualization designers and data prediction designers to add to that melee of skills. And so project management and operations management of these groups requires yet another evolving skill set in terms of the ability to get all these people to face in the right direction and, you know, achieve the right results. So it's a, you know, as always in our industry, it's an evolving skill set. It changes people's existing jobs. It brings in brand new jobs that haven't really been there before. And you know, that's part of the excitement, we think, of any revolution, which is driven by anything, but certainly by technology.
If people are moving to predictive analytics, let's assume that they've already had some experience with descriptive analytics, you know, dealing with the past. As they move up the continuum here, does the gut resistance in the business unit start to fade? Or does it get worse as when the computer's telling the manager, here's what's going to happen?
Yeah, I think it, like anything else, it changes over time. I think the more examples that people see in other places and in their own organization of success, the less resistance they have to. I mean, there are some people who are just resistant to the idea of kind of machines taking over the world type thing, but I think, you know, it's proof points, right? And that is that the first layer is cynicism, that the machine can actually do the work. That generally tends to get followed by grudging acceptance when there's a few, you know, good examples to you know, outright promotion by some people as they see it really evolving. And then again, as we've seen in so many other environments, ultimately we get to the point where, you know, people not only accept it, but they run their lives on it. I mean, two examples that we've got very recently, I'll just summarize them. So one is kind of a consumer world example, where we were in a workshop with a client a couple of months ago, and the client was talking about how they'd just been reading an article from The Economist or someone, who basically was saying that, you know, the average human being of 25 years old today in the Western developed economies can't actually read a map, which is a classic kind of analytics-driven thing. And then secondarily, in the insurance industry, part of that same workshop was we were talking about the world of underwriters, and underwriters in insurance, specialized insurance, is a very sophisticated world. It's also a world that in the Western economies has been kind of shortchanged in terms of backfill hiring. So I think the average underwriter is like 54 years old or something, and they're all going to retire, and they have huge amounts of knowledge in their heads. And a number of the insurance companies that we work with are starting to look at, you know, can they create analytics-based knowledge machines that will basically help these underwriters do their jobs by providing data, by learning what they do. But ultimately, you know, as this 10-year swath of underwriter retirements happen, we're going to get to the point where, you know, these machines can help underwriters be a lot more successful than they have been. They can help predict, you know, risk impacts, whether they're storms and floods or, you know, plagues of locusts or whatever the appropriate is, or political movements, or even just individual home problems. And then they can help their customers manage through those better. And then these insurance companies see a world very near from now, probably 3 or 4 years, where the technology, the predictive analytics, the prescriptive analytics assisted insurance process is going to be as effective or more effective than the, than the current manual process. And in one case, they've actually visited one of the very well-known investment companies who launched robo-advisors in the last 2 years and are seeing the take-up of those robo-advisors compared to their wealth management people and performance, you know, being very quick. So I think it's you know, we definitely see that this, you know, this movement's afoot. It's not so much the analytics themselves as what the analytics allow customers to do and employees to do and business partners to do, the experiences they have, the effectiveness of their business models, and then to your point earlier, you know, a lot of different skill sets required, and as much as anything, I think a real fear in the marketplace that we see that there just aren't enough of these people who have the skills that are required to do this work, which again, personally, we've seen for 17 years in the digital world, where every company in the world, from the local cupcake shop to the intergalactic insurer, all need a website, a mobile app, a social media capability, and so on and so forth. And so the demand on the folks, the skilled folks, is massive. And now we're seeing the same wave happen in the predictive and prescriptive analytics world. And you know, that's where obviously our industry and, you know, companies that have those resources to help customers come in to try and help them move forward and be as effective and as competitive as they can be in their markets.
That talent gap is a topic for another day, and we'll be getting into that over and over again. Some interesting strategies showing up there in terms of how people are dealing with that. Grant, thank you. This has been a great discussion. I apologize for the issue with the streaming media. We will make this program available as soon as possible on A2 as an on-demand offering. I want to, you know, thank you for joining us today, and our guest has been Graham Clark of NIIT Technologies, which has been guiding companies into the predictive analytics field and prescriptive analytics as well. Thanks to those of you who listen, and to SAS for sponsoring this event. This has been Jim Conley for All Analytics Radio and UBM Tech. Thank you for tuning in, and Graham, thank you again for sharing your experience.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.